And a big welcome back to the Endurance Hour podcast. Dave Erickson here, episode 155. Just back from the 2016 Timex Multisport Team Camp in Phoenix, then I said Tempe, and then I really want to say Tucson, Arizona, or Tucson, as this one rookie reporter did back in the day. Tucson, Arizona. Roger and I will be back for a co-hosted episode very soon, but we just got back a couple of days ago. But I wanted to get this out here as soon as possible, and that's why I'm doing this now. I had a really good talk with the USAT president, Barry Siff, while in Tucson. Barry happens to be one of my teammates, so it's really dumb luck that I had a chance to sit down with him one-on-one and talk about the sport of triathlon, the state of triathlon. You know how they say the state of the union? Well, the state of triathlon. And Barry and I sat down for 25, 30 minutes and just, you know, talked about where we are, you know, Rio coming up, who's in contention, the business of triathlon. So I wanted to get this out here for you now. And then we've got some other great interviews and topics lined up that we want to share with you in the very coming weeks. So just a matter of me and Roger getting our bearings together. We came back with some great new Timex kits, a departure from our previous years as what we wear. I'm sure you've seen it on social media. If you haven't, just check out my Instagram account. I am Dave Erickson. Follow me there and look at the photos and look at the new triathlon kit we have from Castelli. Oh my goodness. They kind of call this disruptive. All these bold, beautiful colors. I don't know, bold, but beautiful colors. Colors seems to be the underlying current for the Timex brand when it comes to watches and our image here in 2016. So take a look at that. So without further ado, here's my one-on-one with the USAT president, pretty big deal, Barry Siff. It's going to be a very exciting year for triathlon. We have the Olympics in Rio. We've got a very strong male and female team going to be representing us. I'm here with the president of USAT, Barry Siff, in Tucson, Arizona, where you call home right now. Barry, we've been talking throughout the week about triathlon, and you were telling me, you know, the state of triathlon is very interesting right now, and you have some thoughts about where we are in history in triathlon.
Yeah, there's no question, Dave. And first of all, thanks for talking with me today. I love talking triathlon and trying to build the sport. You know, that's what it's all about. And this is the year to do it with the Olympics, especially if you're here in the United States with the women's team, particularly that we have. We've got a great men's team. We'll have three people at the Olympics, but we could sweep the podium in Rio. We have the ability. We actually are so strong on the women's side that we have enough to field two women's teams. And we're confident, you know, but we got to stay healthy, et cetera. But what Simon Winfield did to Canada back when he won the gold, and triathlon exploded following that time, I think we're going to see that here in the U.S. with whatever Gwen does, with what Sarah True does, and, you know, whether it's Katie Zafaris or Renee Tomlin or Kirsten, whoever can get that third spot. So it's an exciting time for triathlon because over the last couple of years, Dave, it's been a bit flat in the United States. You know, we've seen growth all over the world. We've seen growth of Ironman here in the United States. But as a sport, the number of, you know, USA Triathlon members, the number of participants has been relatively flat. And that's a fact that I don't think a lot of people know.
Do you get surveys from the members or at least feedback on what their interests are, maybe why this membership has been flat?
Oh, you bet. Absolutely. I think there are a couple reasons. You know, Ironman has a little bit of an impact. I'm not going to play that up. You know, a lot of people are saying, yeah, I want to do a triathlon. I'm going to do an Ironman. And they, you know, they get off the couch perhaps, or they just start into it and in a year or two do an Ironman and then they're out of the sport. You know, it's that one and done syndrome. Although that's beginning to improve. There are a lot of other activities out there now that weren't there 10 years ago, you know, whether it's the color runs or the mud runs or, you know, Spartan, CrossFit. We're even looking at things like what I'm doing, you know, Bikram yoga, you know, different activities out there that might be impacting us a bit. But I again feel that the excitement of the Olympics, some of the programs that we're doing, I think will continue to get that curve going back up.
You mentioned programs. What kind of programs is USAT trying to put out there?
Yeah, we have a lot of developmental programs with our clubs. One of the things, since Rob Urbach has been our CEO over the last 5 years, number of clubs have increased dramatically. We're over 1,000 USAT sanctioned clubs. We have over 2,400 certified coaches. And if we can get those coaches and clubs more engaged in membership, you know, membership in USA Triathlon, I think it'll be great for USA Triathlon, and also, you know, strengthen the sport as such. We have a USAT Foundation now, which we started 2 years ago. USAT Foundation is giving grants to organizations to start youth programs. The NCAA program, we've committed $2.6 million to build triathlon into a sanctioned NCAA sport, an actual NCAA sport. Right now it's an emerging sport status, so we need to get 40 universities and colleges on board in the next 10 years. And in the first year, we already have, I think it's up to 12 or 13 universities, including our friend up north, Arizona State University. And to have it as a women's triathlon, to be an NCAA sport, you know, I'm not big on coined terms like game changer. That's a game changer, you know, and I think that's really big. And then just our whole youth development. We have a lot of youth development programs, camps, et cetera, to get kids into the sport, because that's our future. And for the first time in April, at our collegiate national championship, we're having a high school wave. And so there's high school competition, and we have some high school competitions in California, we have some in New York, and we're helping support those as well.
Why is it so important to target, or at least start them young? What is it about this sport that there's an emphasis on going to the high school level and the collegiate level?
It's a great question, Dave. I think triathlon, more than being a sport, is a lifestyle. And if we can get people early and young, it becomes you. You know, I've been doing this for 30 years. It's me. I mean, when people see, you know, I'm a triathlete. You know, I don't do triathlon. I'm a triathlete. And I think if we can get youth, you know, growing up that way, and at the elite level, I mean, we're starting to see that. You know, Alistair Brownlee didn't grow up as a runner turned triathlete. Grew up as a triathlete. You know, and these great athletes today are getting that way. Taylor Nibb, who just, you know, won a big race recently, beating out some big names. She's in high school, and thank goodness for her mother, who's a phenomenal, talented elite athlete. She was brought up as a triathlete, and so I think if we can get people into that triathlon lifestyle and live the life of a triathlete, they stay in the sport forever, and it's contagious, and they help spread those roots.
I think that's one of the keys is making it as understood, and not this idea of a triathlon is this ultra endurance sports athlete race that we think of as the Hawaii Ironman.
Oh, Dave, I'm glad you mentioned that. I have a dentist's office that I go to periodically, and I went in, and they all know what I do, you know, and they're always like, oh my God, I can't believe you do that. Well, about a month or two ago, I go in and they say, you won't believe what we're doing. We're all doing Tough Mudder. We're all going to together do a Tough Mudder. I said, really? I said, that's awesome. How long is it? And they said, it's about 11 miles. I said, 11 miles? I had no idea. And I said, how long is that going to take you? And they said, you know, we're all training for it. We've never done anything like this. It's going to be about 3 or 4 hours. I said, why don't you do a triathlon? And they said, oh my God, I can't do a triathlon. I mean, I can't do that. I can't train that much. And I'm like thinking about the sprint triathlon we do here in Tucson, that, you know, you're done in an hour, you know, and I think people do, you know, I think we've got to clear up the fact that triathlon is not Ironman, and we need to push the sprint and Olympic distance races. And I, for one, have gone cold turkey on Ironman. I love Ironman. I mean, what they do for the sport is more than what anyone does other than our federations, but we need to get people in the sport at the sprint level. Go to a pool swim, you know, a comfortable pool swim. Do it as a relay team. That's another initiative we're doing is pushing more relay teams, and I think that's good for race directors as well. The one thing I want to point out is even though our participation numbers have been relatively flat over the last year or two, the number of races are increasing. So the races, there are more races, but fewer participants per race. And we're trying to help race directors be profitable because we all want race directors to be successful. And in order to do that, we got to give them ideas. So we're doing things like promoting, you know, relay divisions, mixed team relay, et cetera.
Is it a good thing, a bad thing, somewhere in between, that there are so many more races available and we see a lot of the big companies taking over the small local races, whereas you can't really put on a race because it's too expensive, and if you did, someone might buy you out?
Well, you know, I sold 8 races to Ironman, yeah. So, you know, selling out or selling your races isn't a bad thing. I think that, you know, my talk when I speak to people about this subject is simply put on a great race and you're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. And you know, even if a big company comes into your territory, if you're putting on a quality race that's really community-based and you do everything right and do a really awesome event, you're going to be successful and you'll survive. But I think that some of the larger companies are great for the sport. You know, I think Lifetime is doing some amazing things, for example, with their, you know, they kick it off in January and do all these indoor triathlons and get people who have never done a triathlon again to just touch it and maybe fall in love with it. At the same token, I feel very badly about the lack of money at the sprint and Olympic distance level for our professionals. And I'm trying to get some things done in that regard because I hate to see these aspiring pros who don't quite have the speed to go to the ITU route, and that can only be a few people, you know, need some sort of pathway so that they don't have to immediately go into a 70.3 or an Ironman for money.
It's funny, you say there's more races out there, more availability, yet the membership is not growing. They have more opportunities. Is it just a matter of they're not being educated on what's available, or I'm still kind of understanding why we would be flat. I know it's been around for a while, yeah. But where's the flat? What is everyone saying, this must be it, or we're still trying to figure it out?
Well, I think we're still trying to figure it out. I think for the last couple of years, I think it's more the challenge that we've been hearing is the proliferation of the mud runs, the color runs, the other opportunities that people are looking for the next thing. You know, when people ask me when I got into triathlon, why'd you go to triathlon? It was the next thing. You know, I was a runner, became a marathoner, and I looked for something different. It was triathlon. I think people now, what's the next thing? It's some of these obstacle races, perhaps. But, you know, they're running is growing. Half marathons are growing. And we can tap into the running market more. We can tap into the cycling market more. So I think there are opportunities. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it takes a lot of time. It takes some commitment. And, we're still working on that.
Well, you know, you're saying this is one of the most stable sports, endurance sports we've had, minus cycling and running. If you talk about an organized event or a multi-sport event versus the mud runs, the adventure runs, we've been around the longest. So yeah. There is that good possibility that once they've tasted or tested the other avenues or venues, they're going to come back because we'll still be here because we're proven.
Absolutely, Dave. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I was at a conference where I was speaking with the gentleman who owns Color Run, and he said that only 20% of the people who do Color Run come back for a second time. So that's more of a one and done, try it, done it. And I think we go after those people. I applaud, I love the idea that my friends are doing their first sporting event together. And that's the other key, is they're doing it together. They're having fun as a team. They're all going to do it. Literally, they're training together. They're going to go play together. We need to find ways to make that, again, a feature of triathlon. When we look at the last 30 plus years, or 40 years, we're now into our 41st year of triathlon, there have been cycles where it's been, you know, rising, 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 a little flat, rising, rising, a little flat. And I think that's what we're going to see right now. And again, I just think, first of all, let me make it clear. United States has been relatively flat. I believe Canada has been relatively flat. We've been at it the longest. But when you go to places like South America, when you go to certain places in Europe, etc., still growing significantly, and there's lots of room for growth. I think we'll see that again here in the United States, and I just absolutely unequivocally believe the Olympics will be a boon for us in that regard.
You talk about the one and dones for these other off events. We still have a lot of one and doneers here. You know, I don't know if it's the full distances that are one and doneers, but there's still people who want to test this. The age group, is it still skewing older, or because of the push for the younger athlete, we're getting that? Do you know those kind of numbers?
Yeah, we do know those numbers. It is a bit older, you know, group, and the base of the sport is getting older. Uh-huh. But going after youth, you know, draft legal racing is becoming a growing entity. I think we're going to sanction 30 or 40 draft legal age group races this year, which 2 years ago, I don't know if we had any. and now all of a sudden 30, 40 races, that's exciting stuff. And I think getting youth, kids now, Taylor Nibb, for example, is growing up with draft legal racing. I think that adds a bit of excitement and pizzazz to the sport that might create that buzz that we're looking for in the younger people. I think also in the collegiate triathlon program, again, if you're out there cheering for, you know, whether it's whatever the school is, you know, Queens University, who won the NCAA race that we had in Florida late last year, that university is going to start, you know, the triathlon activity at that university will grow. There's absolutely no doubt about it, because they're going to get publicity. They're going to be, you know, people are going to see just how fit and healthy these triathletes are. And that's really our message. I mean, when you hang around, you know, we're here at the Timex camp, and you look around the tables and you look at who we're with, it's a really happy, positive, fit, healthy individuals leading a great lifestyle. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and I think that's why people are staying in this sport, or they do come back to it. They realize this is not a one and done, because this is what I do always.
Yes.
It's more that the swimming has the great benefits, the cycling, the running. You can do those individually, which is an added bonus. Can you speak to the business of triathlon and where it's going? Because you were recently speaking to that not too long ago.
Yeah, I think the business of triathlon, you know, WTC was World Triathlon Corporation, which is Ironman, was purchased by the Wanda Group out of China late last year. $650 million. Yeah. Depending on how you look at it, it might be $650 or $900 million. I think that speaks to the health of the endurance market. And these are very, very smart business people, and they see the growth. And it's not just in China, although the growth is going to be enormous in China. There were two Ironman triathletes in China last year, two people in Kona. There'll probably be, you know, 40 or 50 this year, and it's just going to grow incredibly. Here in the United States, there's great opportunity. You know, whether it's products, whether it's retailers, whether it's teams and clubs, at the Triathlon Business International Conference, there was a great deal of talk among clubs forming around products. Mm. So there are teams that are, you know, forming around a certain bike brand. For example, with Timex, you know, we have the Trek brand. Well, that helps grow cycling, it helps grow Trek, etc. So I think there's lots of opportunities in that. In women's triathlon in particular, you know, we're up to about 38% participation at the women's level, and that's only going to grow. In half marathons now, women are over 50%, and I think there's great opportunity there. So some of these women's brands of clothing, specific bikes, etc., big opportunities there. And I think we need to look at ways to bring more women into the sport, more ethnicity into the sport. It's been a you know, there are not a lot of people of color in the sport of triathlon. We need to address that. We're working on our strategic plan right now for the next quad or the next 4 years. And one of those initiatives absolutely is going to be, how can we, you know, attract and increase the participation level among people of color, among people with less income than what we normally see in triathlon.
That seems my first instinct, and I hope it's not, is it money? Is it financial? It seems to be the barrier, because traditionally or statistically, if you have white America racing, white America typically probably has a higher income.
Yeah, I think it that's a big piece of it. It's also, I think, the swimming part. A lot of you know, different groups don't swim as much. Maybe the swimming pools might not be there, and we can work on that. I mean, we can and we're going to start working on that and funding different programs. That's again what our USA Triathlon Foundation is doing, as well as USA Triathlon, looking into inner city programs that are working and how can we build on those. I think of Cherie Grunfeld and her husband Lee Grunfeld, who have Exceeding Expectations out in California. They've been providing opportunities for kids from lower income families for years, and they're getting these kids into triathlon at an early age through all kinds of fundraising. It's a nonprofit. Get him into that, and now these kids are going on to college. And these are some kids who have never even been to college, and they're, you know, becoming college triathletes, which is just so exciting. And they came from background having very little. So I think there's a lot we can do in that regard too.
You touch on the Timex multi-sport team and having Trek as a sponsor, but you also said some teams are forming around a sponsor. What kind of advice would you give to a group of athletes who are thinking, we want to form our own team, how do we go about this and support it?
Oh, I think there are some great answers to that. You know, I was at that conference, I heard the Cobb Mob, which is the bike seat, formed around that. Quintana Roo is tied in with Jesse Kropinicki's group. Base Performance, another product, which has its own team. And Chris McDonald has his, you know, Big Sexy Racing. And triathletes like to become part of a group, you know, and we want people to be part of a group. And so what these companies are doing are they're loving large groups of athletes who will get together and support their product. And in return, the product will support them. It goes both ways. And they're ambassadors. I mean, just like on the Timex team, when we're as visible as we are, we're great for that brand. And so if it's a group of triathletes who are looking to get together, quote unquote, and tie in with a brand, that's the sales pitch. It's what can we do for you? You know, I think too many athletes, of course, as we know, you know, will write that letter and say, I'm really good. Can I have some of your product? And that's not the way to do it. It's to say, what can we do to help build, you know, your brand? And I think a lot of these clubs and teams are doing that really, really effectively. I was blown away with the fact that, you know, teams like Big Sexy and Base Performance are, you know, have 400 and 500. Waddy Inc. is another one. Right. I mean, hundreds of applicants, and all of a sudden they have hundreds of representatives out there wearing the logos and showing and talking about the products and why they're so good, and that's great for everybody.
Maybe on a personal note, you transplanted down here to Tucson from Boulder. Can you talk about the compare and contrast the two different types of communities in the world of endurance sports?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Dave. You know, Triathlete Magazine came out with a top three or top 10 cities in America for triathlon. And number one was, I think it was either Boulder or San Diego. Number two was Boulder or San Diego. Number three was Tucson. So, you know, I spent a lot of years in Boulder building helping build the triathlon community there through our races and other activities. You know, Boulder's an amazing mecca and community. It really, really is. It's much more than being at 5,430 feet. It's much more than the fact that Dave Scott lives there and Chrissy was there during the day and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's the community. It's the fact that it's a relatively tight-knit community. You know, you go to the pool when I was there, it was Flatirons, and I was at Rally. But, you know, everybody's there, all the names, all the athletes. The races, everybody shows up at the races. It's like a college reunion. You've got great chiropractors. You've got great acupuncturists. You've got great physical therapists. You've got the best massage therapists in the world. You've got everything. You've got the best whole foods, you know, and all the great eateries. It's that entire community that makes Boulder. So that's why Boulder's so awesome. Tucson's, contrast that to Tucson, very, very different. We were on a run the other day as a team running Sabino Canyon, and this guy blew by us. What an awesome runner, you know. And we were at a stop waiting for someone, and he came by, and he stopped to talk to us. And, boy, you're a great runner. Where are you from? I'm from Tucson. You know, he's wearing an Ironman shirt. I said, do Ironman? Yeah. And he turns out to be this really awesome Ironman. He didn't know who I was. I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who Lisa Roberts was, who's the best professional triathlete here in the city. And so it's a very separate community. There are pockets all over the city. But the weather's amazing. I mean, you know, Tucson.
It's no longer a secret.
It's no longer a secret. I mean, the weather it's just phenomenal all year round. So the training ability here in Tucson is great. It's an easy place to live. It's a nice community. It's low cost. You know, Boulder's very, very expensive. I'm talking to some of the, you know, new people who have moved to Boulder now to train to be part of that Boulder scene. They don't live in Boulder. They're living in Longmont. They're living in Gun Barrel. You know, they're living just outside Boulder because you can't afford it. But you go in every day and play with everybody, and it's just a great community. And I think Tucson can be there. Tucson's known as the winter training capital, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, from January to March, there are more camps here. There are more groups here that are cycling and running and swimming than, you know, I would say anywhere in the country, if not in the world. The summers are hot. Summers are hot. You know, 107 degrees, it gets a little bit warm. But I'll tell you, they get out there in the morning and do the training and you can get it done.
Is there something about the sport where we are now that I haven't asked that you wanted to talk about?
Well, the one thing I'd like to mention, I'm also on the ITU Executive Board, Dave, and that's the International Triathlon Union. It really oversees the entire sport, sets the rules, responsible for the Olympics, etc. The thing that I've been most impressed with, two things that I've been most impressed with the ITU, number one, the leadership. Marisol Quesada, the president of ITU, just a phenomenal leader. So positive, so inspiring, travels all over the world trying to grow the sport in developing nations. And that leads into the second piece, and that is ITU gives about $1 million to various regions around the world to help developing countries create triathletes. So, for example, this past year, you know, past 2 years, there's been a big effort in Cuba. So there was a small ITU triathlon, you know, last year in Cuba, and we brought 28 people to Cuba to race. This year it was the second time for the race. Next year I think it's going to be a big ITU race. And all of a sudden we're seeing a lot of Cuban triathletes. And that's what ITU does. At the same token, what's taught me to spread the love, here in the United States, we signed a cooperative agreement with the Africa Triathlon Union to help grow triathlon in Africa. So Ahmed Nasser, the president of African Triathlon Union, came to Colorado Springs. We signed an agreement. Next week, we're shipping 500 pounds of shoes, apparel, wetsuits, goggles, things like that, to Ahmed in Egypt. He will distribute it to some of the African nations that are in need of some of those things. We're going to grow triathlon. And in fact, because of that, we're also working, and this is a long story that I won't bore you with, but there's a gentleman who works with the State Department, the U.S. State Department, who happened to be in Cuba with us. And his job is really sports diplomacy around the world. Well, he finds out in Africa, there in several of the State Department or embassies, there are triathletes, American triathletes. So in the small country of Benin, Africa, Benin, B-E-N-I-N, some of our American embassy workers are putting together a triathlon, and on May 8th, it'll be the first triathlon ever in this country. They have formed a national federation, and some of the other leaders of sport in the country are getting involved, and we're supporting it. And so, you know, it's spreading that love around the world, which is it really means a lot to me, and I think means a lot to the sport. And that's what the International Triathlon Union is all about, is spreading that love.
We've seen races kind of branch out into other parts of the country where there weren't any in the past, whether it was Northeast Asia, India, Korea, Japan, those kind of, there's places like that. What makes a good venue? What is it about a location that says we want to maybe introduce it there, or that would be a great place?
I think the thing that makes it a great place is the community. I mean, you can have a beautiful scenic, you know, it could be Big Sur, California, the most beautiful marathon in the world, or, you know, St. George, et cetera, these great places, but you need the community behind it. And I think that's what made, for example, in our world in Boulder, when we built the 5430 Sports brand and the races, it was the whole community embraced it. So I think if you find a community that's excited about an event and you can generate that kind of excitement, you're going to be successful. We're bringing the age group national championship to Omaha, Nebraska this year. Omaha, Nebraska in August. Now, when you think of triathlon, I bet you don't think about Omaha, Nebraska.
No.
I bet you will in 2 or 3 years. We're going to bring 6,000 triathletes there for the national championship, and Omaha is going to embrace it. We're going to have a media event there in about 10 days, big press conference. TV stations are going to be there, radio interviews we have lined up. Local companies are going to come in for sponsorship. All of a sudden, this community of 500,000 people, which is a good-sized town, are going to know what triathlon is. And I'll bet you're going to start seeing some more great triathletes come out of Omaha, Nebraska than ever before. So that's how you spread the love. You get the community involved. That's what makes success. I mean, as long, got to have some water, got to have some roads. It's got to be affordable, you know, and they've got to work with you. But if you have a community that will support you, you're going to be successful.
Barry Siff, thanks very much. President of USAT, Barry Siff, making triathlon great again.
Thanks very much, Dave. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks again for listening to that one-on-one interview with Barry Siff. And I have some age group athlete, not age group, yeah, I guess they are age groupers, but rookie triathletes with the team that I will share with you in upcoming episodes. Plus, we have, and I hope it comes through, I use my cell phone, my iPhone, to record Alan Lim with Scratch Labs talking to us for over an hour. And I most of it, I think you can hear pretty well. So Roger and I love this guy. We love Scratch Labs. They make some really great food. And I just love the philosophy behind it. And he's going to tell the story of Scratch Labs, the science behind it, how he got started. That's going to be coming up in a future episode as well. Some interviews with a couple of the athletes we met at camp this year who are first-timers with the team. This is the longest, they think it's the longest running or the largest Timex team in history. I think it is. So we've been around. This is our 14th or 15th year. Anyways, when Roger and I get together, we're going to have some great stories to tell about the awards ceremony, some of the awards that were given out. In fact, I gave Roger an award he didn't know about. That's coming up in a future episode as well. So let me go ahead and just wrap this up now. I know it's kind of a short episode. So if you're listening to this on your bike or your run, I hope you had a good 3 or 4 mile run or if it's a 30 minutes or so, maybe a 10-mile bike ride or so. Depends on what you're doing. All right, I'll wrap it up right now. Thank you so much for listening to the Endurance Hour episode. Doesn't really matter, right? 155. Thanks, guys. Have a great one. And follow us on Facebook. We post stuff there all the time. All right, take care. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Life's begun, nights are warm and the days are young.